Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Niall or Nine podcast. It's myself, Niall Byrne, and Andrea Cleary. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Niall. How are we?
Good, good. Welcome to our best of the month, monthly episode, where we talk about music that we loved in the last month. It's been a different kind of month for us this July, so most of the music we'll be discussing will be from July. We took a few weeks off here and there, and we're on holidays and stuff, and obviously a lot has happened since the passing of Sinead O'Connor is probably the biggest one in terms of seismic things that we would have normally discussed on the podcast. And as you probably know, if you're paying attention, I did repost the Sinead O'Connor podcast that we discussed. I think it was last year. We had a discussion with Louise Bruton about Sinead O'Connor's life and how she was wronged, essentially, and kind of themes that were coming up a lot since her passing. And so I think it was very relevant. So I reposted that on the feed. And yeah, and Andrea, you were on No Encore as well last week talking about the life and times of Sinead O'Connor. How are you feeling?
Yeah, good. I did Arena as well in the same week. And we kind of found out, like, just before we started the album reviews, that we'd also be taking a minute at the end to talk about Sinead O'Connor. So in both instances, I didn't have very much time to, like, collect my thoughts together. And I think that was a good thing, because I don't know, I've been thinking about Sinead a lot, and the more I think about her, the angrier I get and the sadder I get. So it was probably best to just have an immediate reaction sort of thing. But yeah. It still doesn't feel real to me. Like, I said this on Arena, but like I can't remember which one, but it feels like we'll get a tweet, or we'll get a little statement, or we'll get a little appearance. You know, it just feels like she's just hiding away somewhere. It doesn't really feel real. So yeah, it's desperately sad. It's just, oh God, like, it's, there's no words for it really. You know, it's the biggest one to hit us in a long time. And obviously, like, Christy Dignam earlier this year as well, like, it's a tough year for the kind of the important Irish acts, you know.
Sinead O'Connor is the global known person that she was. So that's, you know, it's really sad in that way. And it's really sad, I mean, to see so much, all the obituaries around the world and all the people getting it wrong, getting it right, and everything in between. And, but yeah, it was a testament to the person she was, as I wrote before, and we talked about before, you know, someone who was always ahead of her time in terms of social justice, certainly, and in artistry as well, in loads of ways. She did her own thing, and she's a fine example to people who are in the creative arts about pursuing what it is that you want to do without letting commerciality dictate how your art is made. And I think Sinead never really let that happen. And in, as she has discussed previously, there was many times where, you know, the things that she did were seen as incendiary were actually a blessing in disguise for her, because she just wanted to make art a lot of the time. Yeah, unfortunately, you know, I mean, sad, so sad that it was something that we possibly worried about in the past with Sinead's mental health has come to fruition. And that's really the saddest thing about all of this as well. So young and still had so much to give and so much energy and such a life force in music. So yeah, I'm going to play a Sinead O'Connor song later on to kind of mark that as well, just to finish this podcast with a Sinead O'Connor song. But what we'll do now is we'll talk about some music that we liked for the last 30 days or so. Let's start with a first song that we both love. I texted you about this earlier yesterday because I was like, I know you're going to pick this. I want to pick it too, but I also want to, I know you're
going to pick it. We can both pick it. It's both of our picks.
Yeah. One. So we're picking this. Yeah. This is a song by Big Thief. It's called Vampire Empire. Saz, Big Thief and Vampire Empire. Andrea, tell us about this song, because it wasn't the first time that we've heard this song.
No, they've been playing this song live for maybe about a year now, most famously on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. The band played this and it went, you know, indie music viral. People commenting like under any post from any member of the band, release Vampire Empire, like, when are we going to get it on Spotify? It was just one of those songs that had like an immediate effect. And I think a lot of people discovered the band from that performance as well, because the performance itself went a little bit viral. And it's like, it's a bit rare that you get a band like kind of, I don't know, like trying out a new song on such a big stage. So it's
such a big thief.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's the thing. Like, that's what's so great about Big Thief, is that like, there's no one version of their song. Like, you know, there's the studio version isn't the, what's the word? Like the canon definitive version of any song. Like, you know, and I know that like, when you go see them live, they might play one of your favorite songs, but they might play it in a completely different way, like completely different arrangements. And I love that about them. I think that that's really fresh and cool. This isn't that different to the version on The Late Show. It is different.
I think I prefer the live version personally, but not.
Yeah, there's a lot of like debate on like, you know, Reddit forums and stuff about which version people like more. And I like that. I like this version a lot. I miss the flute at the beginning, I'll say that. But I do think the drums sound better in this one. I like that they're a little bit tighter, but I think on the live track, I like that Adrian Lenker's voice just kind of leans in and just like, let's go, and kind of goes a little bit crazy with it. So there's things I love in both of them, and there's nothing I don't like in either of them. Do you know what I mean? I think it's a beautiful song. And the I wanted to be your woman, I wanted to be your man, is that a Prince lyric? I read somewhere that was a Prince lyric, but I don't know it. I thought I'd ask you, as you know a lot more about Prince than I do, but
I'm not a woman, I'm not a man.
Okay.
Yeah, it's I Would Die For You. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm kind of a bit of a like interpolation.
I'm something you'll never understand.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't copy.
I love the lyrics to the song. I love the lyrics to the song so much. I think it's so perfect, and the way her delivery is so like frustrated and like, especially the live version, kind of shouting it as well. And I love that. You say you want to be alone, you want children, you want to be with me, you want to be with him. You spin me all around, then you ask me not to spin, you turn me inside out, and then you want the outside in.
Great.
There's loads of great lyrics in that song. And yeah, you mentioned the YouTube comments, stuff like people saying, I'm on my knees in the middle of Walmart, please drop this already.
Yeah, I saw one before, and it was just like, it was no context. It was just like, what if I died? Like, and you know the context is, what if I died before you put this on Spotify? It made me laugh so much. Yeah. What if I died, Adrian Lenker?
But you know, there's something about this song. I mean, when I heard it, I was like, when I heard the recorded version again, I was like, I just put it on repeat.
Yeah.
I
think there's something
it was
a
one
bit
of those,
like
great a bit, singular songs.
There's something a bit, so I said this to Harry. I said that there's something a bit hip hop about the like I can hear that, like I can hear a bit of like hip hop in that. And he said that it sounds the most like 1990s garage rock of like any song he's heard in like the past 10 years. So we both have like completely different ideas of where that bit like is coming from, which is, I think, really cool. But it's, yeah, I don't know. There's something about that one little bit in it that I just find so like playful and a bit sassy or something. It's great. It's just, it's so good. I love it.
Yeah. Ah, oh, it's a great song. Great song. So that's Vampire Empire. That is going to get a release on 7-inch vinyl, which is a 7-inch vinyl with split with Born for Loving You as well on the 20th of October. So still a while away, but that 4AD are selling that right now. I'd say there's some still left, hopefully, but
you never know.
Presumably they have enough to match demand, but you never know. It seems like a very popular song. That's mad that it is the one maybe that got people into Big Thief.
Yeah.
Yeah. After all this time.
I don't know. Maybe is it... It's poppier than a song I can think of theirs for a while. Since like maybe Paul or Masterpiece. Like there was nothing truly like pop. Or like you can play this on the radio on Dragon New Warm Mountain. Or on UFOF. Or on Two Hands. Maybe Two Hands. But this you could just play on the radio. So if it gets yep. people into listening, and I mean I've been listening this month a lot. I don't have a golden oldie this month, so maybe I'll choose one quickly while we're doing the show from these albums. Well, I've been listening a lot to Adrian Lenker's solo stuff, the two albums that she made with Book Meek, A Sides and B Sides recently. Which are very, very good. Because whenever I go to listen to her, I tend to listen to her solo stuff. I tend to listen to the album songs. She had songs and instrumentals. Both are amazing. But I never really listened to A-sides and B-sides, but they're fabulous albums. Like really, really beautiful albums. So if anyone hasn't gone and listened to those, I would highly, highly recommend them.
Okay, great. That's Big Thief starting things off really big there at a great song called Vampire Empire. So I'm going to pick a song from a Dublin singer-songwriter called Sarah Crean now, who actually just released an EP, debut EP called Death by Laundry. So really interesting stuff. I featured her last year with a song called 2 AM. We may have played it on one of these Best of the Month playlists or podcasts last year. But yeah, that song then subsequently went massive on US Spotify virals charts, meaning that it gathered like 4 million listens. And since then, there's been a lot going on for Sarah Crean. She's managed by the same person who manages CMAT. She's supporting Blackpink at BST in Hyde wow. Park, and also Bombay Bicycle Club on their UK dates. So that's an indication of where things are going for this fairly recently debuted songwriter. Let's listen to a song I think is the lead single from the EP and a really great song called Wasted Youth.
My pain is sighted on a coin of two.
That Sarah Crean song is called Wasted Youth, as I said. Lots of big things happening for her. She's actually playing all together now. I think one of the acoustic sets or areas maybe this weekend, if you hear this before then and you're going down. But that's Sarah Crean. I really am impressed with that. I think a big leap up even from that song I loved last year, 2 AM, and EP as well is quite good. Really good. Got some good stuff on it. Death by Laundry EP by Sarah Crean. There's a song on it that I say, from to my ear, sounded a bit like Andy Schauf, reminded me of that. So Death by Laundry, yeah, 6 5-track EP. Solitaire, maybe the title helps as well. It's the Andy Schauf reference. Solitaire in Apartment 7 is what it's called. But yeah, do check her out. Sarah Crean. And yeah, that's Wasted Youth.
Cool. I'm going to talk about a song from the Barbie soundtrack. Sorry, I'm adding...
Are we going to talk about the Barbie film?
We'll talk about the Barbie film later in the film section of this podcast.
Keep it to the section.
But this is, I think, my favorite track from the Barbie soundtrack. I love the Billie Eilish one. It's really, really beautiful. But when I heard this track in the film, I was like, what the hell is this? I love it so much. It's Charlie XCX. The song is called Speed Drive. It's 1 minute 58 seconds. And it sounds like this.
Film is that song?
You've seen the film? So it's yes. In a chase sequence in Mattel. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So I just loved it right away. I thought it was really like hyperactive and fizzy and sweet and bubbly and cool. And it reminded me of another song immediately. And that other song, I've just put it into the playlist. It's down at the bottom of the playlist. It's a track called Haunted by Laura Les. It was popularized in an episode of Euphoria. Very sadly, actually, an episode of Euphoria that focused around Angus Cloud's character, who very, very sadly passed away recently at the age of 25. And yeah, that was very, very sad. But this track was in that episode. And I think this track is awesome. And so Speed Drive by Charlie XCX, to me, sounded like Charlie XCX doing this song for kids. So here's this song.
I'm tired of being useless. Yeah, I've been up for 3 days. Everything is haunted. Everybody's evil and there's bugs inside the carpet. Do you think I'm frightening? Organ cords and lightning. If I show my fangs, will you tell me that they're cool? Mirror shatter when I'm passing. Broken glass and crap.
Do you hear it?
Hyper pop and Crystal Castles, I'm hearing.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I loved that song, its use in Euphoria. I thought it worked really, really well in Euphoria. And when Speed Drive came on during Barbie, I was like, oh, it's that, but for kids. And I just love that. I think that's really cool. I like that these two songs are like two sides of the same
book. Laura Les is one half of 100 yes. Gecs. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Who so, I haven't really listened to, actually. And I should, because a lot of people tell me.
Yeah,
I'd
they're
like them.
Funny, weird. But you have to be in the mood for it. It's like, if you're in the mood for something really out there and weird and funny and sort of inconsequential, I feel sometimes as well. Like, I don't know. Do you ever feel like you sometimes, I'm not going to say it. Do you feel like you're a bit too old for something?
Yeah.
I don't want to say that.
Oh.
That doesn't feel right to me.
I like a good, fun song. I'm too old for? I'm too old for Ariana Grande. I don't get it. And that's fine, but I'm too old. And it's grand.
Yeah.
It's fine.
So anyway, that's a Charlie XCX song, which is the latest in the line of her songs about vehicles driving. Fair play, Charlie. And obviously that interpolates Oh Mickey Yourself Fine.
It's the better interpolation on the album, the other being Barbie Girl with Nicki Minaj and Ice Spice have a track called Barbie World on it, which is...
Yeah, which comes on the credits, which is, you know, it's never a good sign when a song is used on the credits. Really,
not since the 1990s.
We didn't know where else to put this.
Yeah, it used to be a big deal in the 1990s, but not so much anymore.
Yeah. I mean, Seal's Kiss from a Rose goes on.
Seal's Kiss from a Rose, My Heart Will Go On. The Elliott Smith song in the film about the apples. What do you call it? Goodwill Hunting.
Film about the apples. Yeah, the Barbie soundtrack is an interesting one. I listened to a lot of it when it came out, and obviously some of it makes sense in the film, and you know, there's a lot of echoes of Mark Ronson, executive produced the whole thing. I do think, yeah, I listened to that Switch on Pop episode about the Barbie songs, the soundtrack. And while I agree with you, I really like the Billie Eilish song, but they were saying it's too obvious and it doesn't, it's like too on the nose. And I'm like, I get that, but it's also like the best song on it.
I didn't think it was too obvious. I completely disagree with that. I think that that song is the only song that would work outside of the soundtrack. I think all of the lyrics.
I don't know, that Pink Panther-esque song with the weird Irish jig thing going on. Is something else. It's not. I think I saw District say, "Oh, is this the gloaming?" I don't think it is the gloaming, is it?
It's like, I have no idea.
I don't think it is.
But I think that Billie Eilish song is beautiful. I'd be surprised if she wasn't nominated for the Oscar for that. For another Oscar for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and then I started. You know, it's one of those when people are like, "Oh, this is a terrible song." I was like,
"No, it's not. It's a really good song. It's like a really, really good song. Yeah. I love that Billie Eilish song."
Well, we'll keep our Barbie film chat to later on. In the meantime, couple of bangers from me coming up. I'm going to pick a song. Okay, right. This song is by Quangface, Joe Orbison, and Overmono. It's called Freedom 2. It's basically a different version of Quangface, who is a drill artist who I wasn't aware of until I heard this song. This falls into the canon of great UK garage kind of dance songs with absolutely amazing bass lines, which are drawn from like drum and bass. I can't get enough of this bass line at the moment. I was playing it in the car yesterday. I was like, yeah, put that on again. Put that on again. So this is Quangface, Joy Orbison, Overmono with Freedom 2.
Man spit rhymes, man don't lie. Two step down the next shot fly. Dip hits, chin and sister is. Ask little bro if you think that I'm lying. Them man hate, cause your man so fly. Night takes two J1s and I'm nice. I thought my bedroom wasn't up, so I stopped, nearly pie pie. Quang is this, Quang is that, Quang is Marga, his head's fat. But I'm still king in this bitch, that's fact. Fuck his we dirt man. My man don't fuck with them, you joke man. Low it, I meant joke men. Holden one from up the old blue. Met a sweet one from down the old Ken. Lie. Big crank face from the norm. Big crank. How did I come this far? I think I'm a bandit, they think I'm a star. When I cut through, man, they breathe like raw. Face so big that I can't go shop, man. I always get clocked, this shit is so hot. Is it a fan or is it a op? Either way, man, I'm moving on job. I love my freedom, but I risk it anytime I see them. Fly at the ride, man, breathe them. Put me up, man, he kept on. L2R2, man, pop this corn like the cinema view. If Bones key draws, man's drilling it too. Man's on two steps, trying to finish them youths.
Yeah, that's just got that classic like UK garage drum and bass kind of jungly bass line.
Awesome.
That is just haven't heard it in a while, and really made me want to just rewind over and over again. So two of those songs this month, which is great. Actually, my next choice will be a similar one. So before we get to that, you have a song that I also love.
Yeah, I'm gonna change the tone completely. New song from Mitski. Bug Like an Angle, which is what I've written down here. Bug Like an Angel is what it's actually called. First track release from forthcoming album The Land Is Inhospitable and So Are We. She says it's a story about, it's a song about addiction and the people that it affects. And it's really, really wonderful. Sounds like this.
Sometimes a drink feels like family. Family.
That's Bug Like an Angel. It's quite straightforward compared to her previous album, which was a lot more kind of high concept, a lot of instruments, a lot of synths. This is Mitski, her guitar, and I believe a 17-piece choir who will be featured across the album. And I think that, I just think it's incredibly effective what she's done with the arrangement of this song. You know, like you've got the first chorus, which is what we heard there. Just her and the acoustic guitar. And she sings, "Sometimes a drink feels like family." And then when the choir comes in for Family, the first time I heard it, I got a fright and it felt so like big and like almost like oppressive. And that works so, so well with the themes and the lyrics of the song. You know, it's like the family are breaking in here and like just completely taking over and oppressing her voice and kind of drowning her out entirely, which I just think is so smart. It's so clever. And I'm really excited to hear what she does with a choir. Like she's a classically trained musician. She spent time in music college, so she would have had some training in, you know, arranging for voices. So I'm really excited to hear like what it is that she does with that across the album. But I think here it just works so beautifully. And it's also, you know, choir aside, it's a very straightforward guitar part, just, you know, like almost kind of like, I don't know, like it's obviously purposefully simple strumming pattern. It's like someone learning how to play the guitar would learn that kind of strumming pattern. So she's really, really brought it back to basics on this, which I love, and which is something that I really wanted from her. Like I liked the last album. I know not everybody loved it. I think critics were kind of like middling about it, but I did like it. But this is where I wanted her to go next. So I'm interested to see if the rest of the album is this kind of thing, or if she balances the kind of like lo-fi stuff with the more high concept stuff. But I'm excited either way. I think it's out on September 15th. Yeah, September 15th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like this is going to be a different vibe than the last album. You loved it. It wasn't for me, but I've never been a massive Mitski fan, but I prefer this kind of stuff, certainly. Yeah. But yeah, this really did it for me as well. I think the choir is really like comes in full color suddenly, and you're like, whoa, okay. Yeah. Being engulfed by a choir like that is a really impressive, lovely production on it as well. So yeah, references for the record include Ennio Morricone's Spaghetti Westerns, Carter Burwell's Fargo soundtrack,
sweet,
Arthur Russell's Scott Walker, Caetano Veloso and Faron Young, and Stravinsky as well. Awesome. So yeah, I feel like it's going to be a very different vibe than the last album. So we will see.
Yeah.
Okay, my next track
to the dance
is
floor,
a... Yeah, you know it. It's seems we didn't do a Song of the Summer episode. I'm going to allow this. There's not much to say about it. It's a fun song from Aluna, formerly of Aluna George, who has a solo album called Mycelium, which came out recently. And when it came out about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I was like, I always liked her voice. It's a mixed bag. There's some good stuff on it. But I really love this song. It's one of those, like, this is my pop music, I think. This is the kind of stuff that I'm like, yeah, I want to stick this on and on repeat. And it's called Running Blind. It features Chami and Carrion Lomax. Let's have a listen to Aluna. Thank you. Yeah, that's Running Blind, Aluna and Chami and Carrion Lomax from the Aluna album. Again, just one of those songs that is my song of the summer contenders. As in, it's the fun bop I've been listening to all summer, along with Ten Snake and Jesse Lanza's Keep It Secret. And has there been any others? They're the main ones, I think.
Roisin Murphy and Jesse Ware had a song? Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, good track. Actually, in fairness, the Jesse Ware original as well. I mean, really, the new version with Roisin Murphy is just kind of like her ad-libbing over the original track as opposed to a full different version. It's cool to have. It's a nice thing to have, but it's not
a collaboration. Like it's like a remix.
Okay. Yeah, it's like she was like, can we do something on this track? And I think Roisin Murphy just sent back a version of it. It was like, here you go. Those two. And then the Peggy Goo, it goes Na Na Na, or three of the kind of like big dancey pop bangers for me of the summer this year. So I believe we're going to talk about an album now.
We are going, yes. Everybody get serious. We are going to talk about an album. We're going to talk about The Ballad of Darren by Blur. First album since 2015, The Magic Whip. A lot of excitement around it. A lot of, you know, very, very good reviews of the album. I'll say it didn't click with me right away. The Narcissist, the song, did when that first came out. And I wanted more of that on the album. I got more of that on the album, but it still took me a little bit to kind of seep into. But seep into it I did. I listened to it a lot. I reviewed on Arena, so I had to listen to it a lot. But once I was in there, I was like, yeah, do you know what? This is what I want from Blur now at this stage. So yeah, and it contrasts with another band I'm going to talk about in a few minutes. But yeah, here's The Narcissist for anyone who hasn't heard it yet.
Found my transcendence. It played in mono, painted blue. You were the Pyro. I was the dark room. I'm the shining light.
So I think that song is pretty representative of the album. There's a lot of strings and orchestration and kind of big sounds on the album as well, which I think work really well. It's a direction I enjoy Blur going down. I think that's also the most kind of Blur song on there. Like you can still kind of hear their instincts being followed, you know, especially in the guitar lines. And I think the backing vocals there from Graham Coxon are really, really beautiful in that song. And there's a lot of newness to enjoy in this like direction. Like I think the orchestration stuff is really interesting. They handle it really well. Like for a band that have been a guitar band for so long and then, you know, gone off and obviously Damon has done Gorillaz and like all of the band have kind of gone off and done their own things, and to come back together and not do like an electro pop record and to instead do this, I find very, very interesting. Like there's no Gorillaz on this, you know? I expected there to maybe be a bit of that here, but there isn't, which I find interesting. And I think that's good because Blur aren't Gorillaz. Like they're not, that's not what this band ever was. And yeah, there's some really beautiful lines on it. Like the album is kind of like about nostalgia. I wouldn't say it's nostalgic. Like they don't seem to be like struggling with where they are, but they're reflecting on where they are. Like they're like, we're here now, we're older, we're wiser, we're still really good at being a band, but let's be grown-ups about it, maybe. There's a beautiful line in a song called The Everglades, which is, "We're growing tall with the pain," which I just think is so, so wonderful. And I think Damon Albarn's lyrics across this are like definitely the most like serious he's been with Blur, definitely. And like leaning into being a bit heartfelt and a bit sincere, which I think suits him a lot. I think that it's a nice place to find him in, because, you know, this is his band, you know, they're all together and they're okay with not, you know, doing Girls and Boys. And, you know, as much as I love those records, it probably wouldn't feel right if they came back and just sort of aped what they did originally. So I think it's a really lovely album. I think it's a really nice sound from them. I don't know if they're going to make more, but if this was their last album, it would be a nice way to finish it up, but I hope it's not.
Yeah, it feels appropriately of their time and age, but not like in a way that's, I mean, it does feel like a continuation a little bit of where they were at before that, but not like a direct one maybe. But yeah, I don't think anyone was expecting them to go back to making Tracy Jacks or anything like that, but it is nice to hear how a band can age gracefully in a different way. Like, just people who still get on and are still able to get up and do those old songs, but then they also have these new songs as well.
So exactly.
It's lovely. You had another song. Yeah, you wanted to play,
the first track from the album, "The Ballad," I think is it has a bit of that kind of like soft instrumentation in it.
But I won't be afraid. I can't seem to find you in this midnight parade. I know it's so true. When the ballad comes for me, it comes like you. I fell in love with you.
I met you at an early show.
You fall in. I fall along with you.
We travel around the world together.
Lovely. Did we find out who Darren was after all that?
Yeah, Darren was, like what, their tour manager or someone like that, kind of a crew person who loved the song "The Ballad" and was always pressuring them to release it. And so they recorded it and then they called the album "The Ballad of Darren." So yeah, nice. I think, yeah, it's, there's your humor. If you want it from Blur, something a bit cute.
Okay.
But yeah, and also actually, I think Damon's vocals are really lovely on this album. You can hear it on that song there. Like, he's just, I feel like, I don't know, maybe people do talk about him being a really good singer, but I'm never there for those conversations. But he's a beautiful singer, like a really, really beautiful singer. And I think that this style of song really suits his voice. So yeah. Good to have them back. The lads.
Great. Okay. Well, you picked an album. I'm going to go with my album as well now. It is by a New York songwriter called Joanna Sternberg. Their second album called "I've Got Me." It's very idiosyncratic folk music. It's piano and a little bit of guitar. It's quite simplistic. It's voice. Their voice has drawn comparisons to Kimi Dawson, Joanna Newsom, Adrian Lenker and Daniel Johnson as well. So let's have a listen to a bit of a song called "Drifting on a Cloud" from the album "I've Got Me" from Joanna.
I'm drifting on a cloud. I'm drifting on a cloud. I'm drifting on a cloud. I can't remember when I was back here again. How long has it been? How long has it been since my laughter was bright and I felt this light? How long has it been? I wished for this so long, I don't know what was wrong. in a scream. It has been so long since I smiled for no good reason, like a child. And I'm crying from the feeling, and I'm flying past the ceiling and the sky. I am drifting on a cloud.
Joanna Sternberg, song's called Drifting on a Cloud. The album's called I've Got Me. I'll play another bit of a song here just to give you a flavor. A song called People Are Just Toys to You. Yeah, a little bit of Randy Newman as well, maybe. So Joanna Sternberg doing nice things with that album, I've Got Me.
I remember you recommended them like maybe a couple of months ago, and I was like, oh man, I have to listen to this. And then I didn't. So now I will. This is so up my street, like absolutely my kind of thing.
It's so easy to forget.
Yes, yeah, but it's I've added it to my playlist. That's great. That's amazing. And so is it kind of guitar, piano, kind of across the board?
Yeah, mostly that. It just has that very unique sound as well, kind of innocence as well, which is really lovely, because it's rare for a singer to sound innocent.
Yeah.
And also an actual New York based songwriter as well. There was a New Yorker, one of those little, what would you call the bits at the start of the New Yorker, the kind of little short articles to do. I can't remember what they call them, but there was a little bit with Joanna Sternberg about how they've been living in this apartment block for many years and looking after all the residents and like babysitting and for the residents and stuff like that. Manhattan Plaza. So very rare for someone to still live in Manhattan, really. But it's an artist housing complex. Goings About Town, Department of Song. Joanna Sternberg is a music ninja, is what it's called. So we're having another read of that.
Cool. Okay, so the last band I was talking about, I was praising them for growing up and leaning into their adulthood. The next band I'm talking about, have not done that. We left the throne for a decade just to prove that we could. No one sat on it, so we did it again. If you're feeling like you're number one, get ready to be number two, because we are back. It feels good to have the electricity coursing through our veins once again. All synapses firing in all directions. The unfamiliar combination of words, the hives, and new album finally together again in a way that makes sense and rings true. The initial test results are in, confirmed, and through the roof. The Hives. I've talked about them recently and I cannot stop talking about them.
Ah, Jesus. That was fun.
The most marvelous
My brain was
double, triple, and quadruple negatives you'll hear in a song this year, and that's a fact. What do you want to do? Oh, get down. What don't you want to do? Get up. What don't you want to not do? Not get down. What don't you want to not don't want to not do? Not get up. Beautiful stuff from the Hive. This is the album this year I'm most excited about, The Death of Randy Fitzsimmons, out next week, I believe. I have loved every single song from this album. They've released four or five now at this stage. Since the first one, which is Bogus Operandi, which is just, I think, like, it's definitely my song of the summer. I texted you to say that it was my song of the summer. But this is a band who are not growing up. They simply refuse.
We don't need them to. They should start their own music film. That's what they need to do.
Absolutely. 100%. Like, they did an interview with, I think, Rolling Stone or with somebody recently, where they said that, like, rock and roll should never grow up, that it should live in kind of like perpetual teenagehood, which I agree with. And I think it's so funny that so many people have discovered them now because they were supporting the Arctic Monkeys, a band who have, like, very famously, like, grown up.
Yeah.
So I find that very funny. I love this band. The Bomb, this song is just so fun and stupid and funny, and I love it so much. I can't wait to see them in March. I have tickets to go see them. I'm so excited. I'm going to wear a black and white suit. It's all going off. The Death of Randy Fitzsimmons, my most awaited album. I can't wait. I cannot wait. I bought a t-shirt and everything. Sweet. Like, you know, rock is back, Niall, and it's the Hives, and it was always the Hives. I saw a great comment on one of their YouTube channels. It was like, the Hives are the only band to revive garage rock twice, which I don't think is true, but I like the sentiment.
Yeah. Great. The Hives. Yeah, definitely must play more Hives at the Indie Sleaze night next time we do that, which is the 29th of September.
For the love of God.
Louise McShire will be joining me for that. That's in the Workman's Cellar on Friday, September 29th. Yeah. My birthday weekend. So we're gonna rock it out. Okay, that was great. That was the Hives, out of the Bomb. This is a band called Fizz, which features members who are Orla Gartland, Dodie, Greta Isaac, and Martin Luke Brown, all friends and musicians in their own right. And they debuted with a big psychedelic brass song called High in Brighton a couple of months ago, with an album coming out on September 15th as well called The Secret to Life. They're playing Dublin's Vicar Street on September 27th. I love Orla Gartland's music and songwriting, and I think this one, which is called Close One, is one of hers. I think it kind of gives me a bit of Fleetwood Mac vibe. I think Orla Gartland takes the lead vocal, a really sweet little song. So let's listen to Close One.
You said, let's go dancing, fall asleep in my room. Is this habit or something I shouldn't do? Yeah, that was a close one. Yeah, that was a close one. We were really going through it. Guess we dodged another bullet. We know that we're happier. Careful. Don't come any closer. Go home or stay on the sofa. Fuck it, let's go dancing, fall asleep in my room. This can't happen, guess I'll just see you soon. Another bullet, we know that we're happier. Yeah, that was a
That is Fizz with Close One, and that is Orla Garden on lead vocals there. Really love that song. I think it's exemplifies everything that is really great about Orla Garden's writing, and obviously that is not just her, but it definitely is a lot of what she has to do with that song. I think she also has a new song out this week called Kiss Your Face Forever, kind of a more garagey rocking kind of alternative song. So more new music from her as well. So yeah, as I said, album's out on September 15th and Dublin Sticker Street on September 27th as well. So lots going on there with Fizz, and that is, yeah, Dodie Ordegarden, Greta Isaac and Martin Luke Brown.
Cool. My last track is a band. I don't know anything about them. They came up on my timeline because another band tweeted about them. So if you're in a band and you want to support other bands, tweet about them. They're a band called Girlfriend. They're from Dublin. This song is called Trust. They recently played Music Town. That is everything I know about this band, except also that this track is really, really cool and I really like it. I've actually found a Hot Press article about them that I missed earlier.
hey, no, let's not do that now. Hold on a second.
Oh, is there maybe a Niall and Ireland article?
This song.
Forget Hot Press.
Yes, there is. I can't
get out of here.
I can't actually find it. Hold on a sec. Why can't I find it? Hold on. This is a test of my the website's search engine
optimization.
Function.
Yeah.
I actually saw it this week already because the band were on to me. Oh yeah, I found it now. March, I think the song came out. Song is called Trust from Girlfriend. They were around probably 2018 or so, I think. I actually put them on a gig with, do you remember the, what was it called? The Keys Festival?
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Wasn't it the Dublin Keys Festival?
That rings
or something?
A bell.
Anyway, I put on a gig in the Soundhouse with Girlfriend, Murder Capital, and who else did I put on?
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters, May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
That was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
Time Madness. Is weird.
yeah. Oh, Silverbacks as well. Silverbacks, Girlfriend and Murder Capital. Pretty good. Thursday, July 19th, 2018. Free show.
Get your tickets now.
Lovely stuff. Get your tickets now. So Girlfriend, yeah, it's a 4 years since they released anything, and this is the first
song.
And then they were also on a compilation, A Litany of Failures, as well, which I believe is volume four of that is about to be announced. They actually released a song in December last year, but obviously being December, I missed it at the time because I never have time to listen to music in December. Actually, feeling bad about music in summer this time as well. I'm not going to hear anything tomorrow because I'm going to Altogether now.
You're only one man.
You know, it's like, yeah.
That's it.
Sure isn't. Anyway, this is your choice.
Really like it. Thought it came out this month, but it came to me this month. But there you go. Really like it. Had to listen to the other tracks that is on their Spotify as well. And just really good band. Would really like to see them do well. Seem really cool. I'm sorry, I don't have more information.
That's it. I mean, they were very early on, I think, when they first came out. And then suddenly there was two more songs I was alerted to this year. So I was like, great. Yeah. Oh, they're back. Great. You know, I think they may have been a young band and then maybe had to go off and do Pow Pig, go off and do finish school and college and all that.
Yeah,
kind of
are Pow Pig coming back?
So, yeah. I think so.
I'd like Pow Pig to come back as well. I really like them.
Yeah.
Anyway, we can find that out in our own time. That's it for the music, is it? For the music portion of our...
We'll
keep Sinead for the end.
I have one more song, but we'll leave that to the end. Yeah. So what else have been going on with you in terms of culture and
business?
It's
like there's nothing in the cinema this month. Oh, wait. There was two movies in the cinema this month that I went to see. I went to see Barbie and then I went to see Oppenheimer. And
in the same day or not?
No. I wanted to. No,
that's
but
ludicrous.
Harry wanted to see, he insisted on seeing Oppenheimer in IMAX and he was correct. But it meant I had to wait a week because all the showings were sold out. How incredible is it that, like, I can't remember the last time I went to go book a seat in at cinema that wasn't like a one-time only showing of a classic film or something in the IFI. And it's like sold out. Like this is just amazing. Like it's absolutely incredible. But yeah, so I went to see Barbie opening night. We dressed as Barbies-ish. I had no pink clothes because I'm not like other girls. I felt really bad about it. But I had no pink clothes. My friend gave me a pink baseball cap. So I wore that and I fit in. And it was just the most like chaotic, fun, like giddy screening I've ever been to. Like people were just laughing the whole way through it. It felt like, it just felt so warm and lovely. And people in the lobby were saying like, "Hey, Barbie," to like other groups that they didn't even know. And they'd say like, "Hey, Barbie," back. And I saw a few like, "Hey, Ken." It was just gorgeous. But yeah, I liked the Barbie movie a lot. I came out of it just like smiling from ear to ear. It was so much fun. I thought all the performances in it were great. I think like, obviously, Margot Robbie was amazing as Barbie, and she just has a face that is just very enjoyable to see on a big screen. You're just like, wow, you really are so beautiful and so talented. And like, she's Barbie. Like, she is Barbie, and that's amazing. Ryan Gosling was it for me. Like, he stole the show.
He was so good.
I saw people complaining about people praising him and like being like, "Oh, don't like praise the man in the movie about Bart." And I'm just like, "Do you know, shut up." Like, he was really good. And loved him in the movie. I have thoughts that I haven't like fully formed yet on like the feminism of the Barbie movie, but I think overall it is a net positive. I think having a kind of a Barbie's first feminism is a good idea, and not to weigh it down with like some other stuff. And I just thought it was beautiful. I don't know, maybe it was the combination of like seeing it with like my close friends and the environment of the like the opening night, everybody dressed in pink, everybody dressed as Barbie and Ken, being so excited for it for so long. I think all of that just kind of added to it. Like, it was more of an event than a movie. And I don't think that that's a bad thing necessarily. It's just different, you know. So what did you think of it?
I loved it. I do feel a bit queasy about the whole, like, you know, trying to tell a story in the confines of a marketing exercise or like a brand exercise, but that's all part of it, isn't it, as well? I think for what it is, it's a lot of fun.
I think Mattel, to be fair to them, and I don't want to be fair to them, but they allowed a lot of criticism of their brand into the film, which I was surprised at the level that they signed off on. But yeah, I agree.
I mean, they're ultimately still benefiting hugely from all of this. So like, you know, we don't know how much money they're going to make from toy sales as a result, but like,
a lot.
I mean, they already
was very close to buying a Barbie like after it. So like, I tried to buy an Alan, but you can't buy them anywhere. If they re-release Alans, I will absolutely buy an Alan. He was my other favorite character.
Oh, it's a lot of fun, and I think the songs work really well in it for the most part. He's so brilliant at Ryan Gosling. I think it's so the mopey kind of funny dancing he's doing as well. The staging, I think. I watched my niece's home from America at the moment, so we watched Singing in the Rain last week. She loves dancing, and she'd never seen Singing in the Rain.
Did she love it?
Yeah, brilliant. It's such a good movie. Like, it's
one
so
of my
good
favorites.
Anyway, but like, it hasn't faded, but it's obviously one of the references for the Barbie movie. And I don't know if anyone's seen that. There's a YouTube video, or if you look at the Letterboxd list, the Letterboxd video on YouTube where Greta Gerwig's talking about the films that inspired the movie, or in some case, very specific references. And I think it's really worth watching, because that kind of made me go, right, they really have, this isn't just like, okay, I know Greta Gerwig taking this big IP and making a movie out of it is a thing, but also they do it, I think, with a lot of love.
Yeah.
And I think the sets are fantastic. I think the setting and within the confines of what it is, I think it's really, really good.
Yeah, I think...
and funny. It's really,
it's
funny.
It's really funny.
It's a really
and
funny film.
And I think
film.
What Greta Gerwig did with it is that she did the complications of Barbie a real justice. Like, growing up and Barbie being a part of life, and, you know, every girl in the Western world has a relationship with Barbie, whether it's that she was a little girl who didn't play with Barbies, or she was a girl who had weird Barbie, which is me. I always cut all my Barbie's hair off and drew on them and like made them kind of horrible but sweet. Or there was the girls that loved Barbies and were kind of shamed for it and distanced themselves with Barbie. And I think she really kind of and as well that boys play with Barbies as well. And I think Alan was a really beautiful kind of stand-in for the boys growing up who spent more time with the girls and didn't fit in with the Kens and fit in more with the Barbies, and how the Barbies just accept him and they don't question his presence around them. And, you know, when there is a divide between the Barbies and Kens, it's natural that he would go along with the Barbies. And I think that she really hit on so much of that important, complicated gender stuff that we all dealt with, even as little girls. We were, you know, we had to justify playing with Barbies at one point or another. When you get into kind of like early teen years, you know, and you have to put them away and you have to stop being a little girl. And I saw somebody somewhere say something like that the toys that boys play with when they're younger, it's okay for them to keep playing with them. They're things like video games or skateboards or footballs or whatever, and boys never have to age out of those kinds of things. But the toys that we give girls are, they have a sell by date on them, and if you're playing with them after a certain age, then, you know, that's like unacceptable. You have to become them. And I thought she dealt with all of those things so beautifully. Yeah, I thought it was a really beautiful film, and that's why I think that the Billie Eilish song works so well in it. You know, the lyric, like, when did it end? All the enjoyment, like when, like the fact that girls have to stop playing at some point and boys don't. Obviously, that's like quite like, but like, not all girls play with dolls, not all boys play video games. But that really hit home with me. I was like, oh God, we do have to grow up quicker than the boys. And I think she dealt with that really well in that song. So yeah, I loved Barbie. I thought it was amazing. I thought the joke about the horses was like one of the best things in the film. Oh, I thought Ken's so whole arc was just amazing. That Matchbox 20 song was pitch
yeah
perfect.
The songs, those songs that aren't on the soundtrack, Matchbox 21, like, is, I was like, I don't remember who that's by, just, when I was sitting in the cinema. I was like, but I remember it existing. Yeah. I was like, wow.
But
I don't
that whole sequence with the Kens, so, like, and I'm not going to give anything away about it, but like that whole sequence where she is just skewering men, like, and every girl in that theater when that joke happened just turn to each other as if to say, like, this has happened to me and this has happened to me. And it's like, it's just this, like, I don't know, it's this really funny moment where men are like really seen. And there's like a proper joke, like a real joke that hasn't been made on a screen before being made about relationships between men and women and how men try to impress women and so on. It was so, so funny, so deeply funny. That was like my biggest belly laugh of the whole film, was that sequence. But
and it works so well in the context of like the Barbie universe as well, because it's kind of like, it's simple, but it still rings true as well.
Yeah, you know? And I think as well, that's something about America Ferrera's kind of speech in it, which like, I think initially I was thinking, oh, this, you know, we've heard all this before, this isn't anything new. But the more she said, the more I was like, yeah, we have heard all this before. This isn't new. Why do we still need to say this? Why do we still need to say all these things? This is still an important thing for somebody on a big screen to actually just say. And while I've heard all of that stuff before in my like very feminist circles, like all the men I'm friends with are feminists. Like, you know, I have a bubble around me of like supportive men and women, but like a lot of people don't. And it's really, really useful for people to just see it spelled out like that. So I think the America Ferrera speech was really excellent, and she was great in the film. She was really, really fantastic. I like her in everything. I think she's really talented. But I loved Barbie. I loved it.
Yeah.
What about Oppenheimer?
Okay, so I have not seen it yet. So, but I will tell you this. My first, I was kind of dissuaded in a way, which I think is unfair, and I'll tell you why. My friend Simon, who's in Lumo, went to see it in the IFI on day one with the 70mm print, and he sat beside somebody who was on his phone the whole time. So he was like,
I can't.
I didn't enjoy the movie, but I think a lot of that was to do with the fact that there was somebody beside me who was looking on their phone.
There's a lot of this now.
Opening day.
There's a lot of this at the minute.
Opening day.
And I've seen people, like, I was having a conversation on Instagram with like superstar comedian Michael Fry about it. He had a similar experience during Oppenheimer. Like, don't go on your fucking phone, lads. Like, Jesus. Like, and it doesn't matter if it's opening day or not. It doesn't matter. You should never be on your phone. That's like rule one. Don't go on your phone. But okay. So I've seen Oppenheimer. I loved it. I thought it was incredible. I think it might be his best picture. A lot of people are going to disagree with me here, by the way. And I don't mind it. I'm a really big fan of Christopher Nolan. I know he can't write women. I know, just sometimes it's easier for me to just like put on my little, like, you know, filter and just watch the film and enjoy the other things that he does very, very well in film. But I don't think the women in this film are written as badly as a lot of people say that they are.
Okay,
but it's incredible. If you can, I would say see it in IMAX. Harry has seen it in IMAX, and then he went with his dad to the 70mm screening in the IFI, which he said visually was beautiful, but the sound, because Christopher Nolan like films everything in IMAX and records everything in that like Dolby surround or whatever it is. Yeah. Sometimes in his films, dialogue is a little bit lost in big screens because the speakers can't handle it. And I found that with the third Batman film, and I found it with Tenet as well when I saw them in kind of normal screens. So yeah. and
I struggle with Tenet.
He found that in the IFI.
But he loves noise as well. He loves background noise and overpowering noise. And I'm sure there's a lot of it.
The sound design in this film is the best he's known. Like it's really, really beautiful and unexpected and wonderful. So I'd really recommend seeing it in I went to see it in IMAX out in that like weird haunted shopping center out at the Point. Super fucking haunted, man. Like, but it was really good. It was packed.
What are they holding out for?
I don't know.
Why don't they just like
and
use
like
it?
all the shops when you walk in are like this is available to let, and I'm like, I know. we know.
They had a flea market, Dublin flea market there one Christmas and never again since then. So I don't know.
But what happened. Oppenheimer is, I think, incredible. I would be shocked if Cillian Murphy doesn't get the nomination for Best Actor, and there's a whole host of people who could get nominations for Best Supporting Actor. Robert Downey Jr. in particular, I thought was amazing, and it's great to see him in a grown-up film where he's not, you know, I know he doesn't physically wear a cape in those other films, but you know, he was spectacular in it. It's amazing. Go see it as soon as you can. See it in IMAX. It's incredible. I loved it. TV?
Well, the other movie that I watched there was in the another last movie? Month was the Wham documentary.
Oh, I watched that too.
Which is great. Yeah, it's on Netflix. I've just been on a Wham kick as
Me
well
too.
A lot. So that's been fun. Really, you know, kind of lovely story of George Michael and Andrew Ridgely and how they were put together in school and grew up to be these massive young pop stars. And what I really find interesting about it, other than, you know, George Michael, somebody we've covered here extensively, but also, you know, there's two films about George Michael in recent years, which are both really good. And I watched them again recently, but I really like the emphasis on Andrew Ridgely and his part in Wham and how he was essentially content to, you know, do Wham and that was kind of
such
it.
Such a nice guy.
I think that's really, he just seems so lovely. But also like people try to make him feel bad for not having huge ambition after that. But he was like, look, I knew that I wasn't as talented as George Michael. When you're in a group with somebody like that, like it's not like, oh, he's the boy band member that, you know, had a better career. He's like, he is a superstar and was proven to be. But it also is interesting the back and forth and how, you know, George Michael in voiceover is fully admitting that he was like, my ego wouldn't allow me to not do this, would not take Careless Whisper, for example, and make it my song.
How amazing was it to hear the original demo that they made of Careless Whisper, like the one before they were in the studio when it was just like in their house? I thought that was incredible. It's so immediately a hit, and the fact that people turned it down and said it's not a hit is just crazy. Like I thought and Andrew Ridgely was so lovely in that documentary. I realized that if I was a teenager in the 80s, Andrew would have been my guy, I think. And it's so funny because George says like that early on in Wham, he thought that Andrew would be the heartthrob and that he never really thought of himself as the heartthrob, which I find really interesting because he then became the heartthrob, you know. It was a great doc. It felt as though the voiceovers and the images and everything were made for this documentary, which obviously they weren't. They're kind of compiled from a lot of different places, but it felt like it came together, like it was purpose built, you know, to make this documentary. That was really good. And thank God for Andrew Ridgely's mom putting together all of her lovely scrapbooks over the years. Like she had so much material. Like it's amazing.
Yeah. Serious. It's so good. It's a great documentary. And, you know, in a way, it's a very short one. I mean, it covers a lot of ground. They did a lot in such a short time. But by focusing just on Wham and not George Michael, you get so much. And I think you can then go and watch. I think one of the George Michael documentaries is basically the first 10, 15 minutes is like the one he made, I think, Freedom Uncut, is like almost follows on from that after like 15 minutes or some of the same footage. And you get a quick backstory so you can kind of watch these two together, which I would recommend. And certainly he's a perennial favorite around here and in my family as well. So, yeah, the cat is standing on the keyboard.
He's doing a great job.
Putting lots of arrows in. Anything else you've been enjoying? I started reading The Happy Couple by Nisha Dolan.
Oh, yeah, that's excellent.
Just this week, new book. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it so far. I watched the new season of Black Mirror. Very disappointing.
I watched the first two episodes of it. I enjoyed the first episode, the Netflix one.
Yeah, that's the best one, I think.
The second one, I spotted the twist really early and I was like, oh, okay. That's the one where they're making the documentary in Scotland. I don't know. I'm not that bothered with it anymore. Yeah, I guess the world is a bit too Black Mirror at the minute. That like,
yeah, but I think they're trying to get away from the technology thing, but then it doesn't. I do love anthology shows like that where you can just like dip in and watch an hour episode, and even if you like didn't enjoy it that much, at least like you're not losing too much. So I am a big fan of those kind of shows. So
did you watch that one?
I kind of enjoy
it. Did you watch that? Okay, I can't remember the name, but. Who's the guy, the author that writes about all the monsters, the cosmic horror guy? Okay, Lovecraft. Lovecraft Country, it was called. Have you watched that? Okay,
no,
so it's an anthology series that is like Lovecraftian, but it's also about race, because H.P. Lovecraft was like, quite racist, and his books have a lot of quite racist stuff in it. But this film or this anthology series is mostly about like black characters who deal with like Lovecraftian like monsters and stuff. And it deals with race in this like really, really interesting way, which I think you'd enjoy because you enjoyed Atlanta. And the way that they kind of dealt with race in that show, I think you'd really like Lovecraft Country. You should check it out. It's very good. And perfect, like coming into spooky season. Maybe watch it like next month. It is, it is like some of it is quite scary, but it's great. It's really good. I have some TV. The first is The Bear, which I know you've also watched.
Oh,
it was just masterful. Like I've never...
Do you know what? I had taught this myself, but I saw what's his name? Carmi. What's his actor? What's the actor's name?
Oh, Jeremy something. Jeremy Allen White.
Jeremy Allen White, yeah. Okay, so I was thinking last week how the season one of The Bear is essentially a prelude or prologue to what happens in season two. And he said that exact same thing last week. I was like, oh yeah, it is. Because it does feel like that. You're like, why? Because I'm trying to get my parents to watch it again because they gave up on it. And my sister didn't watch it either. And I was like, no, it's really good. And I know, and people always say this stuff, but you're like, well, I don't really understand. Why are they trying to make a high-end restaurant in this sandwich shop? It's like, yes, in the first season, that is what's happening. In the second season, they're doing that, essentially. So, and I think it's all the better for it when it focuses, obviously, those. Look, you texted me when you watched that episode with Richie. In the fancy restaurant, and him,
Richie,
the great needle drop of him singing Taylor Swift in the car, being genuinely,
Niall, like I bawled,
happiness.
I broke down during that bit. I cried so much. I thought it was one of the most beautiful moments I've ever seen on a screen. It was just so amazing. I was so, oh my God, the emotions.
And it's so earned because like there is, it's not like a pure like out of nowhere needle drop. It's a callback to his daughter and all that stuff, and it's just so brilliant. I was like, wow, that makes me love that Taylor Swift song suddenly.
I've always loved that song, but it makes me love it more. It was just so good.
Love stories, isn't
like,
it?
Yeah. And Marcus's episode where he goes to Copenhagen, I thought was so beautiful. Just all of it. Like, I think it's, I really hope if they come back for season three, spoilers, skip about 15 seconds ahead if you don't want to hear a spoiler for season two of The Bear. I hope that season three deals with them getting their first Michelin star. And that journey, because I think that it would map on well with the journeys of season one and season two, in that there'll be like a countdown timer. We need to do it by then and so on. But I thought it was masterful. Everyone in it is so talented. Everyone in it is amazing. It's not like anything else on television. Like, in the same way that Succession wasn't like anything else on television. Like, it's genuinely new. It's genuinely interesting. I love these characters like they're my family. Like, I truly, truly care about these people and about this restaurant. And that's so hard to do. It's just so wonderful. It's amazing. Oh, God.
Yeah, I'd love to have more of it because they put it all up in one go and you're like, ah, I have to watch this now. It's so good.
I know, but the episodes are so short. I don't know if it would have worked week by week.
No, I think it's great. I'm really glad they did that.
We kind of watched it like a movie.
I think they must have been, they must have been very aware that the best way to watch this, and I applaud them for doing that because that there's been a trend of going the opposite way, especially on Disney, of like with The Mandalorian and stuff, just releasing stuff week by week.
But I mean, I liked that. That makes sense for those kind of shows. I loved, like, if they put all of Succession up in one go, I think I would have had a poorer experience of it.
Too much info.
And you, like, with Succession, you need the week to think about it and to talk with your friends about it and to read all the theories online, and it creates a buzz. Whereas The Bear doesn't have that sort of like, how is it going to end? It's quite binary. Either the restaurant's going to make it or it's not. Yeah. So I think it works better to just spend that time with these characters and just be close to them for a while and then miss them, like really miss them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen some criticism recently of the Claire character, which I also understand as well. I mean, I do think...
I hated her. The poor girl.
Fair. I mean, she's definitely... Well, I don't want to go into the, like, manic pixie dream thing.
There's a bit of
thing,
that, though, isn't there?
More that, like, the emotional weight she has to carry on behalf of Carmi. I was like, we see this so often. Like, a man who doesn't know what he wants or is being emotionally propped up by a woman. I was kind of like a little bit surprised they went that way.
I will say, though.
But it kind of also does make sense as well.
Her last scene with Carmi through the door, I think, more than justified her presence in the series. Like, I thought that was a really great emotional scene. And I felt emotional watching it. So I was like, oh, maybe I do care about Claire more than I thought I did. But... like, I would like to know more about her. That's it. Like, it's like, I want to know what her interests are. I want to know, like, is she struggling dating a chef while she also works in, like, the ER? Like, what's this experience like for her?
Yeah, they kind of paint her as this person that has this perfect life. Who's like, you know, I'm just going to pop outside the hospital for a second
and
ring my boyfriend.
Yeah, she's like, never at work. Like, she's just like, I don't know, a part-time at the hospital. Like, I don't know what she does all day. And it's...
Yeah, and I don't need... Is there any other friends? There's not really any other friends that she has.
No,
like,
no.
Maybe they're referenced, but like...
The only people in the world she knows is Carmi and his friends and family. She just exists in a bubble. And it's a shame because it's a show that's not afraid to, like, you know, zoom in on a particular character and really spend like very, very like valuable time with them. Like, we only have 20 odd minutes in an episode and we learn so much about all of the characters this season. And she's just, I don't know, hopefully they take it on board for season three and we get to know a bit more about her.
I'd say you're going to get a Claire backstory.
I hope so. Because I like her and I like the actress that plays her. Like, she's, but you know, she did her best with what she was given.
I kind of felt like,
maybe we wouldn't have noticed it as much if the rest of the show hadn't been so great, particularly with its female characters. maybe it wouldn't have jarred as much because we're used to seeing Claire on screen in other stuff, you know, that kind of character. Maybe it just jarred because they're so good at characters. Like, that's the thing that this show is like truly excellent at. Maybe that's why it just felt just discordant or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, even the way she's introduced the very first time, like this kind of very extreme close up, almost dreamlike kind of beautiful woman, you're like, okay, this is a bit on the nose.
Yeah. And they're always like
the way that she pursues
talking to each other so close. They're like this.
yeah. What about personal space, just, guys? You know, get over it.
COVID's not fully over, guys, you know. Have a bit of distance. Yeah, no, it is weird. It was the only bum note in an otherwise perfect season of television. But saying that, it's not like she's the only woman in the show. Like, there are very, very well-formed female characters in that show who are incredible, not least Sydney. So, you know, it wouldn't be something to not watch the show over, just in case someone's listening to this and hasn't seen the show.
What I felt like I was hoping for secretly was that, like, because it was released all at once, I kind of had this feeling that they were like, they must have season three ready to go. It's just like ready to go later this year, right? It just felt like that. It felt like they know what they're doing and they're going to...
No, well, not with the strikes now. God knows when we're going to get it, which is with the strikes. Yeah. Like, Euphoria, the next season, isn't going to come out until late 2024. Like, there's going to be a period, like, next year where there's just nothing on television. Like, it's... And rightly, you know, we support the strikes, but, like, it's just mad. Like, yeah, that's it, I think, is it?
Yeah. All right, great. Well, there's plenty of old stuff to watch. If anyone's ever seen I, Claudius, that's a great BBC drama. You should watch it.
Oh, and actually, I've an Patrick old Stewart's recommendation that I watched for the first time this month, which is Detectorists, a BBC drama written and starring Mackenzie Crook, is that his name? Gareth from The Office, a group of metal detectorists in like the West Country. I think in Devon or somewhere like that, in England. And it's truly, truly beautiful. There's three seasons of it. I think it's all up on Netflix at the minute. It's really, really, really beautiful. You laugh, you cry. It's very cozy. It's one of those things where like not much happens, but you're just kind of spending time with these people as they go metal detecting. It's beautiful. Yeah, I'd highly recommend it.
Other thing I've been watching at the moment is Shrink Next Door. I think it's a bit of an older one as well. I think it's a single season. Paul Rudd, Will Ferrell and Catherine Hahn, based on a Wonderly podcast of the same name. True story of a therapist who basically takes over a man who owns a drapery shop's in New York's life.
That sounds cool.
Really interesting. It came out a couple of years ago. My sister reminded me of it. I didn't know it was a TV show at all, but I had listened to the podcast. So I've watched that a few of them episodes now. It's a single season. I think there's 8 in each in the season. So I'm enjoying it. It's Will Ferrell's playing it straight.
Oh, it's a drama, once, is
which
it?
Is also good. It's really good. I'm really enjoying it so far. Nice for this kind of time of year. Right, before we go, I said we'd mark Sinead O'Connor's passing by playing one of her songs. So I thought I'd pick a song from her debut album, The Lion and the Cobra, of 1987. It is actually her debut single. It's Troy from Sinead O'Connor. It was written by Sinead based on a poem by William Butler Yeats called No Second Troy. I think it's a really brilliant song, and not one maybe that's very obvious. It's quite a Kate Bush-esque song. It's got a lot going on. It's quite ambitious for a debut single. It's something really special, I think. There's a review from Slant Magazine in 2007 by Sal Cinquemani, who says of Troy that it's the album's defining moment, exhibiting all of the traits: vulnerability, fury, conviction, theatricality the infamously outspoken singer-songwriter would become known for in the years that followed. So I wanted to maybe mark Sinead O'Connor's passing with this song as well. You can hear like some fury, really fury in this. And the flames burned away and you're still spitting fire. Make no difference what you say. You're still a liar. You're still a liar. That's how the song ends. And I'll leave the final words in the podcast really to Sinead this week. But I will rise and I will return. The phoenix from the flame I have learned. I will rise and you will see me return. Being what I am, there is no other Troy for me to burn. Here's Sinead O'Connor. That's it from us this month. If you like what you hear and you want to support us, it's patreon.com/909. Now, other things, of course, you get access through the Discord, which is where currently people are talking about the weather at ATN, different things around the ATN festival, gigs and live shows, sharing videos from Music Town and all sorts of stuff. The Music Leak, of course, prices of vinyl, all that kind of thing. All discussion and things going on in there. If you want to be a part of a nice little music community, mostly based out of Ireland and sometimes gets very competitive with music leagues, well, you can join us on Patreon, patreon.com/909. So you can, from a $5 a month, you can join us there. We really would appreciate and love if you joined us and help support us in a way, for a low price a month. So that's my pitch, and that's it from us this month. Andrea, I'll talk to you next week.
Goodbye. Bye everyone.
Goodbye all. That's been the 909 podcast.
Bye. You should've let the light up. You should've let the light up.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.